Hello, welcome to LTL and John's La Liga Weekly. Hope you're all staying fit and well. Terry is in his secret bunker on the Hearts-Essex border. We can't give you the precise location for obvious reasons. Terry, have you carefully positioned the bookcase behind you?
No, I know. I must admit, I must get myself a bookcase and then carefully select the books that make me look like I have special subjects that I swat up on. We're referring, of course, to pretty much everybody that's on television nowadays. It does appear to be using the various forms of communication, i.e. Skype and whatever, to display their bookcases behind them. I haven't got one, I must admit, but it's the first thing I'm going to do when the lockdown finishes. I'm going to rush out and buy some. I might just get that wallpaper, you know, the wallpaper that looks like a bookcase. I think that might be much better solution.
You could probably get probably counts as an essential item. You probably get a little package of books that make you look clever. You know, a bit of James Joyce and stuff like that. It's just, you don't have to read it, obviously. Just as long as it looks like it's been opened a few times on the shelf behind you.
And thankfully, you can't see me behind me today. We're just audio, so that's far better for everyone.
Yes. Yeah, we were made for podcasting, Terry. We basically put it out on Twitter for some ideas, and lots of people wanted us to discuss particular teams, or classic teams from the year. So then we asked people for their ideas, and we got lots of replies. So thank you to everybody who got in touch. We've now chosen a few of them to feature. So we're going to do a couple of different podcasts on this. Basically, we'll see how long it lasts. We'll see how long that we're having fun talking about them, and then we'll decide how many podcasts to cut it up into, and we'll come back and do it. We won't do them all in one go. People came up with some classics. For example, Lee Clifford, he wanted Barca 04-05. He wanted Atleti 13-14, which is their title winning year, under Simeone. Depor 99-2000. Lots of people have said Depor. And Sevilla 06-07. Again, lots of people wanted that start of that Sevilla European success era. They played some lovely football. We'll come to that another day. Someone literally calling himself A, the official Remo, Barca. Now, he's gone for quite a big range of 08 to 12. I think I might put that to the vote, actually, on which is the best Barca team, which is the one that people love. It doesn't have to be, there's nothing academic, there's no answer to it. We just want you to say which team you love. And he said Madrid 13 to 18, the best team's football has ever seen, question mark. Spain's national team, but again, a big era. Kelvin Brown, Barca 10-11. Lots of people go for that particular version of Barca. Sevilla 06-07, Villarreal 05-06, Atleti 2013-14, Athletic Bilbao 11-12. Good question, or good one. And then Real Madrid 16-17. So there's lots like that. Taj chucked in Zaragoza 06-07. That is good knowledge. Villarreal 05-06, Pellegrini's team at its peak. La Real 12-14, so the Griezmann, Vela, Xabi Prieto, etc. Athletic, the two cup runs again, good one. And he says Depor 03-04, and probably his age, but he says the only season that he watched Super Depor. So, Terry, out of that lot, there's a lot to talk about, there's no rush. Because there's no prospect of any football happening anytime soon, because there are obviously more important things to worry about. But so therefore, Deportivo. So T. Bales, Deportivo 01-02 title-winning season. Rivaldo's bicycle kick, Super Depor 99-2000. Mackay, Gialmina, Pablo, Fran, Nabet, Silva, etc. Now, Jackie makes an intro. Jackie boy, he liked Celta in the 98-2002, the Mostovoy Carpin era, as he puts it, he hated but admired them. But he's actually a Depor fan, and it is, I think it's Depor that's going to win the day. So that's going to be our first port of call. Now, we've discussed Depor before. Depor in this era, it was quite extraordinary, Terry, wasn't it? Because they'd come from nowhere. There was no long history. You weren't reviving a great team. It's not a particularly big city. I think somewhere in the mid-teens, I looked it up, 19th biggest urban area in Spain. So the equivalent of England of Stoke, Wolverhampton, that kind of size of place. So nothing really cried out that A Coruña would be this place that could become the centre of Spanish football and European football, but with a huge sense of determination and a lot of money that they didn't have, they created something special.
Well, they did. And I mean, you look at the players that they acquired, and then they did have, funny enough, a period of where they actually threatened to become a really big club. I mean, winning the league is one thing, but they were sixth the season before. So that's there or thereabouts. Then winning the title, then finishing second, third, Champions League football 5 years in a row. Defeating AC Milan 4-0 and 0-3-0-4 after being and going through 5-4 on aggregate in the Champions League. So they really were threatening to become one of the big teams in Europe. Unfortunately, as we've come to know now, that they didn't have the money. Their ambition, it paid off in respect of it got them Champions League football for 5 years. They won a league title. But there are, you know, jokingly, we still say they are still paying the bills from that period of time. And it's interesting. You look at it now and you look at the transfer fees that they paid. They weren't particularly excessive. But I guess when you go from a starting position of being a yo-yo team, which they were, to competing towards the top end of the division, to winning it, then that's when things got slightly out of hand. But for a Depor supporter at that period of time, I mean, we know now that they were a yo-yo team. They still are a yo-yo team. But for that brief 5-6 year period, they were genuinely becoming one of the bigger, you know, more successful teams in European football. So it's a great story. If you're a Depor fan, as I say, you would love that period of time, and you probably would have given a choice. Can you have 5 years in the Champions League and win a league title, but then struggle again for the next 15 years? You know, then, you know, would you take it? And I guess their supporters would have done.
Yeah. So let's try and narrow it down, isolate out when the great Depor period was. Now, they're referred to Super Depor, and it means the whole era from when they were promoted in the early 90s. The very familiar president was Augusto Lendorio, who was a local guy. He wasn't as rich as, obviously, the guys who run football clubs now. He's almost a walking reason for FFP, isn't it, for financial fair play, because he obviously came along and spent money that he didn't have. And ultimately, that is what UEFA is objecting to, that and the inflation caused by the likes of Abramovich coming in and the Qataris at PSG, etc., because they come in with money, it inflates prices and other teams can't deal with it. So that's the reason for FFP. But the strong case is people like Lendorio, who came in and spent money that simply wasn't there. So they had this guy, Arsenio Iglesias, who'd been around forever. He retired because he was 65 in the middle of it all. So he was the first guy, one of these club legends who keep coming back to the same club. He got them promoted. And then they won the Copa in 95, but they had that near miss, the dramatic near miss in 1994, when they were a penalty away from winning the league, weren't they? And it was Djukic, who is now the Sporting Gijón manager, who took the penalty, because Bebeto refused to take the penalty, and they ended up losing the league.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's an extraordinary story in terms of how they, you know, they had a period where they threatened, they were relegating up backwards and forwards between the two leagues, and then, you know, it culminated in, when you look at the squad, you know, the squad that was assembled under Iraheta, it was, I think, looking at it, 4 Brazilians, 3 Argentinians, 2 Moroccans, a Serbian, a Dutch, goalkeeper from Cameroon, Czech Republic. So they'd obviously worked hard on the scouting. They had some money and then backed it up with money that they didn't have. And it became, you know, a team that was, you know, you're talking about the 4 Brazilian players. I mean, they're international players and, you know, players that hung around at Deportivo for a long period of time as well. And then, you know, you brought in Roy Mackay, who was the focal point of the attack, the player that gets the goals, and Jelmina, and the midfield players I'm talking about, Conceição, Merrill Silva, Jelmina, Donato at the back. I mean, it was an incredible assembly of players with a manager that somehow managed to gel them into a team. They were good to watch. And we'll talk about the season in general as well. What a strange season it was in La Liga.
Yeah, so Irueta came in 98. So they'd had the near misses. They'd won the cup under Iglesias. They had a Brazilian coach, Carlos Alberto Silva. Can we talk about the Brazilians individually before we get onto the details of that season? So very different in their experiences with Deport, all great in their way. Rivaldo is probably how it should have been done. Landorio admitted years later that he should have been selling players as well as buying players. Yeah, good idea, mate. But Rivaldo worked, because Rivaldo was only there a season, wasn't he? But so they signed him and they sold him on to Barcelona for more money. Did well in his season. So that is the kind of model they should have been pursuing, alongside the opposite, I guess, is Mauro Silva, who had 13 years there, another Brazilian World Cup winner, as was Bebeto. But Mauro Silva was sort of the rock-solid base of that whole era.
Well, he was. I mean, you're talking about a player that had 59 caps for Brazil, was instrumental in them winning the 1994 World Cup, where he played in central midfield alongside Dunga. In 2016, he was voted by Deport supporters as their best ever player. Mm. Now, Juan Carlos Valeron is, I would have thought, would have won that. But it just goes to show the impact that Mauro Silva had on Deportivo La Coruña. Conceição was a different type of player, of course, a bit more flair, and ended up playing for Real Madrid. And Mauro Silva was another player that was, he would play alongside Mauro Silva, and then you had Gelmina, who was the more attacking element. Donato turned into a central defender. So it was to get those players in one club, to gel, to come up with the chemistry that would make them, a slightly Brazilian looking in terms of the flair and the attacking style from Gelmina and maybe Conceição. To the rock-hard, solid, dependable, strong mentality players like Mauro Silva and Donato. So it was, with all these teams, we're looking in hindsight, it eventually proved to be, the perfect chemistry between them and the Argentinian players and the important Dutch player up front in Mackay, Cameroonian goalkeeper. It was a marvellous blend, and some interesting names other than the Brazilians in that team as well. So it was great to watch. It was a great story at the time, because we're so accustomed to seeing Barcelona and Real Madrid, fighting for the league titles. We're going to be talking about other teams that have done similar, and Atletico Madrid have won one, Valencia have won a couple, but Deport is, they're even a notch, aren't they, below, obviously below an Atletico Madrid winning the league or Valencia winning the league. Deport, are not meant to win league titles, and obviously this was the only one they've ever won.
So tell us about the season itself then, Terry, the big season. So they'd had the near misses, they'd been runners-up, but then 99-2000 under Javier Irueta, it all comes good for them.
Well, it does, and it's a strange season from start to finish. I mean, Deport went top after 10 weeks and stayed there for the rest of the season. So there's no doubting that they deserve to win the league. I mean, they won it by 5 points in the end from Barcelona in second. Nothing strange there, apart from Deport winning the league, of course. Valencia were third on 64, then Zaragoza we're in fourth place. We haven't got to Real Madrid. Real Madrid finished in fifth on 62 points and won the European Cup. The three relegated teams were Atletico Madrid, Sevilla and Real Betis. And the Pichichi winner was Salva Ballesta of Racing Santander. So you look at Deport, we're lavishing praise on Deport left, right and centre, rightly so. But they won five games away from home. It's a strange setup when their strength was at home, where they won 16 of their 21 games they played that season. They only won five away. They lost 11 games. So we had this season, which it's not a million miles away from what we're seeing now in the current La Liga season, where, teams are taking points off each other. Barcelona and Real Madrid are fighting at the top. That's the one exception. But they've dropped a lot more points than they would normally do. And no one so far in La Liga this season has been able to capitalise, but certainly Deport capitalised that season. you know, in terms of, you know, other teams not being as strong as they probably should. But you know, I've already said that Real Madrid did win the European Cup their season, so they were no mugs. But it was just it was a strange season. The three teams relegated, the Pichichi winner, Depor winning the league, Real Madrid finishing fifth. It's highly unusual, to say the least.
And in some ways, quite good, wasn't it? Because I know at the very pinnacle of quality, you expect the giant teams to dominate. So when Barcelona or Real Madrid get it right, they are the strongest teams because they've got the fan base around the world. They've got the potential to sign players financially because players want to go there. Sometimes it's interesting, isn't it, just to chuck it all up in the air and see how it lands the odd season like that, where you just get a different winner. And I think it sort of keeps everyone's faith in football a little bit. Obviously, even though they were, in a sense, they couldn't really afford it. And in a way, FFP stops teams like Depor doing what they did. Because there was quite a movement of players through. Because you mentioned Valeron. I always think, when I look back on Valeron's career, fine player though he was, in a sense he missed out on everything, didn't he? Because he was at Atleti after they'd won the double, and then he went to Depor after they'd won the league, and that was it. They only won the league once. So I think he's got one Copa del Rey win in his career for, you know, a much vaunted career and a much loved player. And I think Tristan came the summer that they won it as well. So again, another player who you associate with Depor, but didn't actually win it because they didn't collapse overnight, did they? Because in 2004, they got to the Champions League semi-finals. And that was a weird season in the Champions League, wasn't it? Because we ended up that season with Porto Monaco in the final. That was the emergence of Jose Mourinho, because it was Mourinho's Porto who eventually knocked out Depor, who'd hammered Milan, who were the strong favourites to win it at that point. Along the way. So they still had some excellent teams for quite a few years after this.
Yeah, they lost the semi-finals 1-0 on aggregate to Porto, which was the winning goal was a penalty. So they would be, you know, they came so close to actually making a Champions League final. They as I said at the beginning, they hung around. I mean, this is the equivalent of Leicester winning the Premier League, isn't it? Depor winning the La Liga back in 1999-2000, and then hanging around for a little while, and then we've consequently seen what's happened to the club since. This season, currently, they're battling to stay in the second division. So it's an extraordinary story. I've been to the stadium, the Riazor. I can't imagine what it was like when I went. The atmosphere wasn't particularly special. It was a midweek game and it was three quarters full, if that. And it's a lovely stadium. It's smashing place to go and watch football. It's right near the beach. But it's not one of those traditional clubs that is steeped in history. We're talking about a 5-year, maybe a 10-year period where they were competitive, where they threatened. You talked about the early league title miss. Then they won the league title, hung around in the Champions League. And if you're a certain age, you probably, you know, grew up at the time thinking this was going to always be the case with Deportivo La Coruña. They're following, I would imagine, a crease around Europe. Certainly people were more aware of the football club. So in those respects, you know, Lindora, the president, he achieved his objective. You know, he put Deportivo, you know, La Coruña in people's minds. As I said, regular participants in European football, semi-finalists in the Champions League. And it's as we've said countless times, not just on this podcast, previous podcasts, you kind of need that genuine support history to sustain a period like Deportivo had. And unfortunately, they haven't. They didn't. And now paying the price for a remarkable period. And Roy Mackay was a great player out front for them, Pauleta. Some of the other players are really interesting when you do your research and you look back and you see who was playing for who at the time. You think, oh, I forgot he was there and I forgot he was in that position. One of those being Victor Sanchez del Amo, the recent manager of Malaga. He's been manager of Betis. And he was a really important part of that team. He was a winger, full of skill, full of pace, got lots of crosses in. Roy Mackay will certainly be grateful for his part in that league campaign. Mackay ended up with 22 goals And Victor Sanchez was, you know, main provider of those players like Fran, the Spaniard, who's another legend at Deportivo. He was another good attacking player. Manuel Pablo, we used to joke, had this for years after the league title success. He had a ridiculous buyout clause of about 120 million euros in his contract. We used to joke about that. Nordin Nayrabet, who actually had some time at Tottenham Hotspur. He was part of that squad that won the league title. And Slavisar Djukanovic, who's been managing in England, Watford and Fulham primarily. He was a part of that team as well. So it's interesting, you know, when you look at the characters in the team, and I mentioned earlier about the Brazilians, the Argentinians, the Cameroon goalkeeper, the Makai, the Dutch player leading the line up front. Very few Spaniards, but it worked, and it was a joy to watch. I mean, I talked about a resort being not the most atmospheric of stadiums, but it was back then. You know, in that period of time, it certainly was.
Shows you the size of the task, though, to grow a football club big, because they had a lot of success. They had a team that was great to watch with some fine players. But I can't honestly say I've ever seen a Deportivo La Coruña shirt walking around the streets of England. And we don't hear, you know, we hear from Real Madrid and Barcelona fans. We hear from, you know, fans of other clubs as well, but never Deportivo. I guess also mass communication wasn't the same then. It is, obviously, we watched it. We watched this on Sky, didn't we? But the whole interconnectivity of the communication wasn't there. So I guess you still had people supporting their local clubs a bit more than you do now. So a team like Depor having the success now probably would grow something of an international fan base that they just weren't able to grow. So I guess, you know, the ultimate conclusion is that it was great. But Lendoro was right. He should have sold. They sold, because you mentioned Roy Mackay, won the Golden Boot. They sold him to Bayern Munich. He'd scored a hat-trick against Bayern Munich. They sold him for 18, 19 million euros and made a profit on him because they signed him from Tenerife. So it made that kind of thing made sense in that you've got to be prepared to build it. But he wasn't prepared to build it, was he? He sat in his restaurant, loving it, doing his business out of his upstairs of the restaurant. Loved the fact that he was feted and regarded as this kind of football genius. But that was it. You know, they gave us something. In a sense, they were Icarus. If you know your Greek mythology, they flew too close to the sun and melted and came plummeting back to Earth. But, you know, it gives us a story to tell, doesn't it? So, you know, all in all, that's why they're a cult team, isn't it? You know, there were flaws, but it was great.
Yeah, I think you make a great point. Even back then, I'm not even sure it was on Sky that season, 99-2000. I'm not sure if it was. And if it was, it certainly weren't the games that we've become accustomed to seeing. Currently, we can see every game. It would have been until sort of halfway through the season, you know, week 10, they took their position at the top of the table and stayed there. I would imagine around the world, it took a while for, you know, countries to realise this might be a story. You know, at the time, they probably thought, oh, this is interesting. There's a different team at the top of the league. So I think that the game to watch for anybody who's not aware of the players that we're talking about and about the story and listening in and wondering what they were like, you can find it on YouTube. In that season, they beat Real Madrid 5-2. And it will tell you everything you need to know about Deportivo La Coruña, the way they played. You know, I talked about the atmosphere in the stadium. It's brilliant when you watch it. And you look at some of the players that Real Madrid have got. As I said, they won the European Cup that year. But then you see the performance of Makai and Victor Sanchez del Amo, and in particular from Jalmina. So if you haven't seen too much of Depor, you haven't seen too much of Jalmina and the other Brazilians in the Depor team, that's the game to YouTube. It's one of those that is readily available. And I think it does lend itself to the fact that I said probably all their games weren't on telly every week, and hence, you know, why they weren't known around Europe until they won the league. I mean, it went down to the last game of the season. They had to win and hope that Barcelona didn't. And funny enough, their last match of the season was at home to Espanyol, and they become comfortable 2-0 winners. And that meant Espanyol didn't do Barcelona any favours. Goals from Donato and Roy Mackay meant that Depor actually, you know, were able to celebrate a league title. So it's a great story. And as I say, I recommend that, you know, that one, watching that. And I guess the Milan game where they come from behind from the first leg and win the second leg 4-0 to go through 5-4 on aggregate, that would be another one to see how they evolved, the likes of Luque and Tristan, as you mentioned, Valero coming in. Valeron coming in. So it's, you know, it is some, you know, that would be the two games I would look at on YouTube if you weren't, you know, watching Spanish football at the time.
Right, let's take a pause there and we'll be back with Athletic's Cult Season. Right, welcome back. Well, we spent a lot of time talking about Deportivo La Coruña, but we're going to do one other team before we leave you for this edition of the podcast. Ryan Perry says, I mentioned one or two others before, didn't I? But Ryan Perry says, Bielsa's Athletic team 2012 was tremendous to watch, peaked at Old Trafford. What a performance, Rafa. That Bielsa team was something else. Still remembering watching the performance versus Manchester United in awe. But it wasn't a one season wonder, was it? So Athletic Club de Bilbao. And they'd been a rock solid team under Caparrós, and they'd actually finished higher in the league than they managed under Bielsa. So it's another story, Terry, where it's a little bit of a sort of two-edged one, isn't it, as to how successful he was. Very different from Depor in that there is no money spent. There's no big transfers incoming, some fine players. Ander Herrera did arrive, didn't he, for a transfer fee, but very few players in that team cost a lot of money. Javi Martinez had come for 6 million before that. But Bielsa came. We'd only ever very, very briefly seen him in Spain once before, although he had the big reputation from Argentina, from Chile. So he arrived with a big reputation. The new president of Athletic wanted him, and he wanted a transformation. He wanted a new style, and that's certainly what he got under Bielsa.
Well, he got it. It didn't start immediately, I have to be honest. I think you look at the opening. Mm. I mean, what's interesting, there's loads of interesting stories about Bielsa, and then we could do a very, very long podcast on him and you know, the fact he had two scenes at Athletic Bilbao. But The interesting story I saw was he was a promise, wasn't he, from a president who was running for election, a possible president who was running for the election of president of Athletic Bilbao, and he promised that he would bring in Bielsa. And at the time, Caparrós was doing okay. It was another one of those emotional moments when a manager was forced to leave a club. Caparrós has had a few of those. And he was a popular manager, Caparrós, in the end, because they were doing okay. But Bielsa was always the choice. And once it was announced that a candidate was running, promising Bielsa, it was a given that he was going to win it. And, of course, Bielsa was going to come in. And the interesting point is, I think he's done it with other clubs, I'm pretty sure he has, he managed somehow to watch all 38 league games of Athletic Bilbao and do a colour chart on each player. That spell of a week or two where he was appointed, and then, you know, the season's, you know, pre-season starting. So he's an extraordinary manager. His attention to detail. He has a reputation of burning players out either during a season or over the course of, you know, two or three seasons. And it took a while for the players. I mean, their first five games, they got two draws, three defeats, 2 points from the first five matches is nothing to write home about. And it was a derby against Real Sociedad where he got his first win of the season. So the penny sort of dropped. And I think the important point you make is that's what people wanted. They wanted a change of style from the traditional English style of play that Athletic always normally have. And they wanted a more passing game, and that's certainly what they got with Bielsa. And they went on a great run after that Real Sociedad win, domestically and in Europe. And for a season or so, they were, you know, fantastic to watch. They really were. I mean, the style of play was pleasing on the eye. Young players came into the team. Players changed positions. Herrera was a great addition. Itor Aspi had come through the system alongside him in midfield. Javi Martinez changed to a central defender. Oscar De Marcos, we still no idea where is his best position, because up until that point, he'd been an impact player as a sub, as a centre forward, backup player to the other strikers. Then all of a sudden, he was playing right back. He was playing midfield. He was playing left back. And, you know, each player played their part and embraced the fact that, you know, what Bielsa wanted from them as a team, as a, and as individuals. And it was a great little period for Athletic Club.
I remember commentating for Sky the early, some of the early games, and we did not have a clue as to what he was trying to achieve. I mean, it was, it's difficult because we did them off the telly, you know, shock revelation. But I remember sort of Iraola, who was the right back, having a shot, you know, crossing the ball on the left channel, that kind of thing. And you're thinking, what? That's and then Ortaneche. But it's not dissimilar from what we see Pep do now. You can see the influence of it. But obviously with players who he couldn't pick all of his players. You had to deal, it's Athletic Club, you know, you have to deal with what you've got. You have to make the most of it, which is why it was such a fascinating experiment. And they obviously worked hard. And then, so was that the contributory factor to, we'll get onto the cups in a minute, but to their poor end of the league campaign? Because in the end, they tailed off and finished 10th in La Liga.
Yeah, and lost two finals heavily. Having worked so hard to get to the Europa League final, they lost 3-0 to Atletico. They then lost 3-0 to Barcelona in the Copa del Rey final. And yeah, I mean, you watch the games back and you can see them immediately trying to win the ball back high up the pitch with Llorente and, as we said, De Marcos playing off of him, Susaeta, Munain, Itor Aspi and Ander Herrera were working hard in central midfield. You mentioned the fullbacks, Mauro Bieta was one of the central defenders, Gopegi, Javi Martinez dropped into the defence, Iraola, and then Altonetti. I looked him up afterwards because he was 17, 18 years old, wasn't he, when Bielsa gave him the opportunity to play. And he looked to be a real talent. He looked to be a player.
I liked him, yeah.
He was going to be around for a long time. And then you see, you know, what happened to him. Different manager came into Athletic Club and didn't use him as much. He went on loan to Celta, Tenerife, Mirandes. He joined. He then joined a team called Amora Bieta. Spell at Dundee, back to Amora Bieta, out to Australia, and now he's playing for, at last I heard, Atletico Baleares in Mallorca. So, and he's still, you know, an age where you think he could have still been doing a job, or certainly could have been doing a job for a lot longer at a high level. So, it's a perfect example of a manager getting the best out of a player in that position as a left back. He fulfilled everything that Bielsa wanted from a defender. Loads of energy, loads of enthusiasm, good on the ball. But no one else has, it appears, no one else has ever fancied him. So the strange one, but I talked about the names there, the perfect centre forward. Llorente was younger, he's more vibrant. He put himself about, he was dynamic. And then, you know, pace on the flanks, hard work and talent in midfield. And primarily, the players looked as if they really, really enjoyed it. You know, the change of style gave them something different to think about. And they flourished. And, you know, the performances in Manchester United in particular will be the standout performances of the season. I can remember talking about the game prior to those two legs. On various radio and television programs, and people thought I was a lunatic because I predicted that it would be a really tight two legs. And don't, you know, for Manchester United supporters, don't expect this to be, you know, a walkover. Don't assume we're going through because they've got some good young players, they've got some good senior players, fantastic manager. It could be a difficult two legs for Man United, and that's exactly what it was in the end.
So that was the Europa League. So to be fair, Caparros had qualified them for the Europa League. In their group, they played Red Bull Salzburg. They played Paris Saint-Germain, so a couple of clubs that had money coming into them. It was newly taken over Paris Saint-Germain at that. So they had Pastore, who they paid 40 million for, but not the rest of the superstars. And then Slovan Bratislava. They got through against Lokomotiv Moscow on away goals. And then it was the round of 16 when they played United. and they won 3-2 and then 2-1. And they just bamboozled Manchester United, didn't they? They made them look slow and predictable compared to the kind of football that Bielsa had Athletic playing at that point of the season.
It was a massive surprise, honestly. As I said, I talked about the interviews I did before the two games and contrast with the interviews after the two games where, you know, people in the UK were full of admiration from what they saw from Athletic Club over those two games of football. Not only the fact that they had good players, but the type of football they played. And I think what impressed people more than anything else was the speed at which they played, you know, to win the ball back quickly, to move the ball forward quickly. Everything was done at such pace. And as you said, it quite rightly, it bamboozled, you know, Manchester United. It was a massive shock in the UK when they saw how good Athletic Club were. You know, people like Mignane was not in, you know, on people's radar. Fernando Llorente wasn't at the time. Not too many were. I mean, Ander Herrera certainly wasn't. You know, he ended up possibly on the back of that performance, impressing Manchester United. And one of the players they could get, Javi Martinez, went off to Bayern Munich. Llorente did his travels around Europe. Of course, you know, we know Iraola stayed there for a long period of time. He was a fantastic player for Athletic Club. Itaraspi has only recently left, but he certainly played his best football under Bielsa. So it was a smashing, you know, I would say one season from Bielsa. The second season certainly didn't, you know, reflect the performances they showed in the first season under him. But certainly the first season was one to remember. Two cup finals, the disappointment of losing both heavily, though, will, you know, sort of make that, you know, take away the emotion of what should have been a fantastic season. But to make two finals, to have some great results along the way, to play the football that excited the people at San Mamés, he certainly left a memory and what I think, you know, in one outstanding season.
Yeah, so they then beat Schalke and they beat Sporting Lisbon. So I'm going to upset the purists. It was Sporting Lisbon versus Athletic Bilbao in the semi-finals. And then they lost to Atleti. So that was new Simeone with the Atleti team of Falcao, who got two goals, Brazilian Diego, who got the other one. The Copa del Rey run was easier, actually. I looked up that, and it was that Oviedo, Albacete, Mallorca, Mirandés. So actually, sort of fell for them a little bit, and then they were well beaten in the final by Barcelona in the end. And then, so that you mentioned briefly that second season, Terry. So had they just run out of ideas? Were they tired? Was the Bielsa thing a short-term thing, that something that he's managed to avoid this season with Leeds United, wasn't it? That where he'd almost got a reputation where his magic would only work for a short period of time.
Yeah, I think, you know, important players possibly left. I think Javi Martinez might have gone. I think Llorente might have gone. There was, I think, also teams then become aware of what you're facing against. You know, when you have an outstanding season, I mean, like they had, I think that the two finals were a reflection of the accumulation of all those games to make the two finals. You mean, you talk about an easy run in the Copa del Rey, but it's still two legs, you know, to get to the final, the two legs in the European competition to get to the final that they had to go through. And they're probably looking at playing 60 games that season. You know, if you make the final with two competitions and a full league campaign. So that possibly is, you know, they didn't have, we talked about the players, that you know, the starting 11, and then probably they didn't have a backup of 7 or 8 that could have played and helped out more than they did. So you're probably looking at the same, you know, 12, 13 players that played most of those games, and that's where the problems crop up at the end of that season. The following season, teams probably, you know, in the season before, were used to playing against Athletic Club, you know, the big striker, try and get the ball wide, get crosses into the box, pretty direct from back to front. All of a sudden, it was something different. And then I think they kind of got sussed out in their second season. So I think it would be easy for us to say that players do get tired, but I think after you've had the summer off, and you come back to action, that's not really an excuse. I think there's more of a case to say that, you know, that in his second season as manager, maybe teams sussed them out a bit and were more aware of the changes they were going to be facing against Athletic Club than they were the season before. So, but as I said, it was a memorable first season. They ended up early exits from the Cups, from the European Cups, the Europa League, early exit from the Copa del Rey, and finished 12th in the league. So it was, it really was just that not a one season wonder, but one season that was memorable in the minds of the Athletic Club supporters.
Yeah, and but he likes a small squad though, doesn't he? Because he's chosen a small squad at Leeds. He could have, I know there's not a vast amount of money at Leeds, but he if you look at how many of those Leeds players this season have played every game, and some of them played every minute of every game, that's a Bielsa thing, isn't it? That's a sacrifice you make. You sacrifice the players' long-term fitness in a way, for that cohesion that it gives you, because obviously chopping and changing your team all the time, you lose a lot of the team play, that they're getting to know each other and all of those kind of things, and then you save up some fitness for the end of the season. So that's, it's a balance that he's prepared to very much err on one side rather than the other, and take a gamble with the players being fatigued.
Yeah, definitely his preference. I can't argue with it. I think possibly there needs to be a balance between what he does and what other teams do. But in terms of playing that recognised 11 as much as you can, understandings are built, partnerships are built and developed, and that becomes a strength of a team. As I say, I think you just need that balance between, not having 25, 30 players and having to rotate and give players a game just because you feel it's kind of the right thing to do. He hasn't played for a while, I'll give him a game. He doesn't do that. He tries to play the same team week in, week out. But it does take its toll when you get injuries, suspensions, and you're playing 60 games a season, which is what they did in his first season there. But it was a fantastic team to watch, a brilliant season to watch Athletic Club play under Bielsa, but certainly wasn't followed up by the second season.
Right, Terry, I know that there is no other entertainment around at the moment, but I think we should probably leave it there. This is probably long enough now. So that's two teams down, and we're going to record another one because we've done the work basically, and now we have been nagged about doing Malaga in the it's not a million miles away from the Depor period, although it didn't work out so well, but so that will be next on our agenda, so watch out for that one. Thank you to everybody who's contributed, and we will be back with another podcast very soon on some more classic La Liga teams.